This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martireno. We're here on Saturdays at this time talking about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. One of the great things about having a partner like Retreat when we talk about this disease is that we rely heavily upon their expert people. That's the case today. Jack Sodak has been a frequent contributor to Recovery Radio, and Jack is with us again today. He is the Director of Outpatient Services for Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, and he joins us today to clear up maybe some misconceptions about something that we speak a lot about, read a lot about, and bandy, throw the term around quite frequently. And that's codependency. We're going to find out what exactly that means today on Recovery Radio. So if you have some time, stay with us. Jack, welcome back to the program. Nice to see you again.
Thanks, Steve. Good seeing you.
So, yeah, you agree. This is a term that's almost in popular usage now, codependency. Let's talk about what that means. What are we talking about when we talk about codependency?
Right. So, codependency is basically just an extension of the whole addictive process, and it's just how I relate to others in my life and have a sense of belonging or a sense of alienation, depending on my life history, my upbringing, and the way I currently relate to people. So in essence, in a short snippet, it's a love-hate relationship. Addiction is a love-hate relationship with a mood-altering chemical, an activity, or a relationship. So for example, that can go across to family members who have addiction in their family, or it could go across the board for most folks who have chemical dependency. When they get sober, they usually have these issues to kind of manage and deal with so they can have a long-lasting recovery and happy life without using chemicals, and as well as getting a sense of belonging.
So let's be real clear about this. When someone comes to a place like Retreat for treatment for the disease of addiction, they're not the people that are codependent. We're talking about their loved ones and their family, correct?
True, but we're also talking about them too. I mean, so we're trying to stabilize their chemical dependency and help them to achieve some sobriety. But thereafter, part of their treatment plan, in a lot of ways, when they're seeing ongoing therapy, therapist or a counseling center, oftentimes once they have achieved some months or a year or so of sobriety, oftentimes some of the core issues and things underneath that they're having to address to have a healthy lifestyle, they're needing to work on so that they can be more spiritually released, so to speak, and be able to kind of not be living in a conditional relationship with the world. So what I mean by that is there's something that I'm getting from you or from this thing to help me feel better inside. I know it sounds kind of heady. I'm saying spiritual freedom, but really that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to have an understanding of myself as a person and connecting with others in a loving, healthy way. And there's healthy connections, not unhealthy connections that have that I'm medicating myself
right
with.
Well, that's the key point here, I think, that what we're talking about is almost a dual-track sort of a situation. You've got the patient who is, abusing substances, and family members interacting with them, connecting with them, that may not be helping their recovery. So it's critically important in treating the disease of addiction to address that on both tracks, both from the patient's track and from the family's role in that.
Absolutely. Any good treatment center and therapist is going to talk about addiction and recovery with the person who's seeking help for that. And they're also going to be integrating and educating family members so that the family understands what the recovery process is like, because it can be very confusing.
Mm.
So, for example, we want to make sure that we're clearing up, what are behaviors that you do that show love for your family member, but they might inadvertently be contributing to their using behavior?
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a deeper look at that, because that dynamic is very interesting, as you said, very important. What are some of the characteristics of codependency, and what's the impact on the family?
Well, I'm kind of confined to a homeostasis where I want to make sure that the system is confined to that everybody's in a prescribed role, so to speak. For example, just hypothetically, if I have a family that I'm working with and the father could be kind of aloof and detached, maybe he's tried very hard to do the best he can to coach his son or daughter and help them to get better. And it's not working. So oftentimes, I'm not saying this happens across the board for everybody, but usually parents, one parent is the chief enabler and another parent, is kind of trying to execute things and make sure that things are happening so you get, good results. Like, stop using the behavior, get a good job, and you'll be okay. Find a nice young lady or find a nice young man, And so they're doing what parents do. They're loving their child in a paternal, maternal way. But the disease of addiction, once it becomes manifests itself in their lives, those roles get contorted and misunderstood.
And become part of the problem.
And taken advantage of, yes. I mean,
right?
If I'm the person who's chemically dependent, my addiction is taking advantage of the love that my family has for me.
So, and it's very important. And I'm sure you see this all the time. The family comes in, begins at some point during the whole process to hear about their role in this and the notion that they might be codependent. And they must look at clinicians and go, codependent? What are you talking about? All I've been is a father, all I've been is a mother, or siblings. My experience, and I'm sure it's yours, siblings have a lot of anger about this, mm-hmm. and they go, he's been messing up, and you're telling me I'm codependent. How do you begin to break down that process of resistance to family members and loved ones who go, wait a minute, I'm just doing my job as a dad or a mom?
Well, we have a family education program here, as well as a lot of treatment centers do that. They provide a separate time for the family members to come in, and it's usually coordinated with visitation times. If you want to come and visit, you should go through this educational programming, and then we'll have you visit your loved one who's getting treatment. So they learn a little bit about, roles that we get into, roles that become more defined as the crisis of addiction progresses in the family. Usually whatever role I am in, if I'm a family member, like if I'm the chief enabler and I'm loving you as much as I possibly can, I'm tolerating a lot of the behaviors because I don't know what else to do, because I don't want to turn my back on you. You're my son, you're my wife, you're my husband. And I need to learn, how does that role now being manipulated by the disease
right.
process?
It,
so. We learn then how to break that. So
yeah.
We talk about what needs are. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that later. What do I do then if this is me?
Yeah, let's hold off on that for a second. I want to get a little closer look at this because, as I said, it must be terribly confusing for family members to try to work their way through what's productive and what is counterproductive. So here are a couple of sort of touchstones you can comment on. What role does denial have in this process?
Well, just as the person who's coming to us for treatment for addiction is not really seeing the full picture about how the drug use is affecting their life, the family members have a similar response. I might be looking for reasons to not accept the fact that addiction is what's happening to my family member who's using chemicals or alcohol. So I might just look the other way. I might not bring it up. I might be at a family gathering and know that somebody is under the influence, that you or he are under the influence, and I'm not going to say anything about that. Right. So other family members might ask me, and I'm like, oh, no, he's just not feeling well today.
So it's the standard family notion of let's not make waves or let's not make things worse,
right.
And it isn't even recognized for what it actually is, which is a denial of what's happening.
Right.
Yeah. What about in terms of responsibility? Do you have to help people decide what responsibilities they should be accepting and what they should not be picking up?
Absolutely. So that takes some practice. So if I'm used to, if I am a spouse, for example, and my spouse has become addicted and I've started to manage the bills, manage the children, manage the household duties while they're away at work and maybe the addiction has prospered, I'm now overly responsible, and I'm maybe very comfortable with that. And perhaps I have a lot of responsibility at work as well. So most times family members, especially folks that are primarily codependent, don't know when to stop with the responsibilities. Their role of acting and taking care of responsibilities becomes progressively worse, and it becomes their identity, and they don't have anything else to hang on to.
Right. Another typical family reaction to any crisis is to have somebody, if not everybody, constantly riding to the rescue.
Right.
Is that a problem?
Yes. I've had family members tell me privately, you know, look, I've been monitoring his odometer, so I know where he's at and where he really went to. And when I ask him if he went to Philadelphia, you know, I know if there's 300 miles on the odometer last night, I know he went farther than Philadelphia. And I know that he used to secure drugs in New York City, for example. So, you know, they do a lot of policing and secretive behavior to kind of make sure that do I have control of this? And I think that I have control of this. So part of the issue is that, again, addiction is. I'm looking outside of myself to feel better about myself inside with an activity. And so my activity as a family member is to focus on spending a lot of time and attention on my loved one who's using chemicals, because I believe that if I love them enough, if I watch them enough, I have control over this, and I will help them, and I will rescue them, and I will save them.
And finally, Jack, in this segment here before we take our first break, all of these behaviors can ironically, tragically, result in actually reinforcing the bad habits of the patient, right?
Yes, right. For example, if we put rules on the drinking, for example, and then because we have that, we think, okay, well, maybe that'll happen. Maybe if I go drinking with you at the bar, I can drive you home. So if it gets out of hand, at least then I make sure that you're safe. And to me, it might make a good idea if I'm the spouse. To kind of make sure that I'm driving him home and her home because I'm doing something safe around the drinking. So, you know, oftentimes then I'm not letting that person see, this person I care about, how the using is affecting me
and
us.
I want to take our first break here, but with regard to this topic, which is incredibly difficult to get your head around, all of these behaviors, this impact that addiction is having on the family, resulting in codependency. It seems like you're describing a bunch of behaviors that, if they are not understood and then adjusted, wind up sort of trying to plug the dam up one little leak at a time and never really addressing the main problem.
Right, right.
Jack Sodak is our guest on Recovery Radio this week. Jack is Director of Outpatient Services for Retreat Premier Addiction Centers, and we're talking about codependency and its impact on the family. Recovery Radio, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm Steve Martorano, guest in the studio with us, Director of Outpatient Services for Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, Jack Sodak. Jack is here to discuss codependency and the role and impact this has on the family when trying to come to grips with the disease of addiction. Jack, the first segment was terrific. We got a great definition, a working definition of familiar family behavior, if that's not redundant, that on the surface looks like what you're supposed to be doing, but in fact winds up being part of the problem very often and not part of the solution. So let's talk a little bit now about what are the kinds of things, the practical, everyday things family members are doing that reinforce this kind of behavior?
Right. So our roles and how we permeate the ongoing use and tolerate it in the home often is established by, even though everybody might act differently around the issue or addressing it or not addressing it, the rules are pretty consistent for everybody for the most part. So, you know, really, we talked a little bit about denial. So the family's in denial. They're not acknowledging that this is an issue. I'm specifically not pointing out what happened last night with your drug use and how it's affecting me today emotionally, and I'm worried about you. That doesn't usually happen. There might be somebody in the house that expresses that, but then it's pushed down and quelled, and then the day goes on, and then the person's back to using again.
Silence is a great ally of this
Absolutely.
Disease, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What about this is a very emotional situation for a family and for an addict. What rules or what reinforces these problems with regard to people's emotions? How do you deal with the emotional component here?
So my emotions will stay within. My true feelings about what's happening, I'm concerned, and my concern is kept inside because I'd rather not have this get worse. I don't want to make it worse. Most folks in the families, when there's active addiction going on, are very tolerant of very intolerable behavior. So where somebody else might point out what happened last night, why Jimmy is not coming to the family dinner today is because he's hungover in the bedroom. You know, I'm going to say he wasn't feeling well last night. There's something going around. I had a cold too. So I'm just going to keep it all underneath. And I want you to not talk about that when we have other family members coming or visitors coming to the house.
Yeah, so, again, that's a kind of typical family dynamic, because whenever there's a crisis, and there's probably no greater crisis than the disease of addiction, the experience of emotions getting involved, it's always sort of negative, and it's taxing, and it's draining. And so the suppression of those emotions is on the one hand understandable, but as you say, it's wrong.
Right. So I'm either numb and it's not happening, or I'm angry. And so it vacillates between one end of the spectrum or the other oftentimes. So some folks might get angry in the family and start bringing it up. That person, the role of a scapegoat. So the scapegoat is a person in the family who is going to be the spokesperson and say, look, Jimmy's not out here at dinner today, Aunt Martha, because, you know, he got too wasted last night or too high. And that's what's really going on. But mom's not going to tell you. And mom maybe will, you know, if she's the placator in the family, she's going to say, well, that's not true. He was sick on Friday. So there's going to be this protection mode and this back and forth. But in the meantime, nothing changes with
right.
the behavior.
Right. So if it's not healthy or productive to suppress emotions, that these emotions should be recognized for what they are and then expressed, communication must be critical.
Right.
What do families need to know about communicating with someone who has the disease of addiction?
Well, I need to learn what my role is, for example, if I'm seeking support, if I'm a family member, and letting Jimmy know that I'm concerned about his behavior last night and that he didn't join the family, staying with our example, if he didn't join the family dinner, I might go and wait until he wakes up later and say, you know, I was very hurt that you didn't make it. I'm really concerned about your using. I know that you were out late last night. I stayed up to see that you came home. I didn't tell you, but I'm very scared. I love you. I want you to go get some help. I can't live like this anymore when you're coming home looking the way you looked. And I understand you drove. I was terrified.
Yeah, all the cliches wind up being true. So honesty is obviously the best policy
right.
in here.
And you can do that without a lot of drama. It might get dramatic. And certainly that's actually expected. So if I tell you how I really feel about your drug using behavior in the family and talk about that privately with you, the person who's actively in using their addiction is going to respond with a lot of drama, a lot of anger, and threats.
But are they hearing? Are they hearing the message?
They may or may not. But I certainly one golden rule is don't address it while the person's under the influence. Address it. Wait until, you know, unless you have to and there's a crisis. But really, you want to address that when the person is moderately sobered up to kind of address it the next morning when maybe it's more going to be more receivable. So the nature of addiction is, again, that if I'm actively using, the best thing that we can do as treatment professionals and people that try to help is to separate myself from my drug using behavior, that my disease of addiction is separate from me, the real me. It is a part of me, but I want to be able to kind of learn how it's affecting my life and then secure recovery and learn to manage my impulses, learn to manage my life in a different way. Family members also have to do the same thing. I am not as affected by this behavior, and I'm not going to let it affect me. I am not going to respond in kind with this enabling behavior right now. I'm going to practice something different because I'm just going to say that I'm scared and I love you. He might scream. He might yell. He might go back to sleep, but at least he heard me. And I'm going to let him know again, but I'm not going to do it in a screaming, yelling way.
Right.
And I'm definitely going to do it. I'm not going to keep quiet about it.
It's important to break that cycle, which is never ending. Jack Sodak, Director of Outpatient Services, our guest here on Recovery Radio today. The topic, codependency and the family's role in solving these problems and also the impact of the disease of addiction on the family. This is Recovery Radio. We have more. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you every Saturday talking about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. We say it all the time. It's worth repeating endlessly. Millions of people have managed to live in a long-term successful sobriety. So it can be done. Recovery Radio sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We're going to go back to our guest, Jack Sodak, in a second here. Well, actually, we're going to go back to him right now. As we speak to folks here on a Saturday, tomorrow, I understand Fall Fest is rolling back around again at Retreat. Tell us about Fall Fest.
Yes, hi. So Fall Fest is our kind of like our community give back. It's a way that we invite folks from the community, alumni, clients, family members, to our site here, the outpatient site, and we, you know, have food. We have our radio show, and we have a band, and it's just the time to get together and kind of celebrate the recovery of the folks that that have sought help here, or just in general. You don't have to be necessarily a Retreat alumni to come.
And that's going to be on the grounds of your facility, the outpatient facility in Akron. What's the address?
Right, 333 South 7th Street here in Akron, Pennsylvania.
From noon until 3. Tomorrow. And, Jack, if anybody's listening here who doesn't have a connection with Retreat or is wondering about, they have questions they'd like to ask, and they can drop by?
They sure can. We actually are doing tours of the building as well so that they can see our outpatient site here and all that we do. We do offer family education in this building as well as family support groups and treatment.
Well, great. I will be there, of course. We're going to be recording a program. And if you're in the area, Akron is 45 minutes, an hour from the city of Philadelphia. But up here in Lancaster County, you're invited to Fall Fest.
It'd be great to see you.
So let's get back to our – and incidentally, let me give you the phone number for Retreat. And we give it to you every week and tell you we hope you never have to use it, frankly. But if you do, these are expert people. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, 855-859-8808. 855-859-8808. Their director of outpatient services with us, Jack Sodak. So, Jack, let's sum up here what we were talking about before the break with regard to the certain rules that the family should follow in order to deal with codependency, and then we're going to get into some of the needs for the family as well.
Right. So some basic rules of addiction in the house are, you know, it's not okay to discuss the problems. We're not going to sit here and resolve them. We're going to skirt them and avoid them. We're not going to talk about it. We're not going to express our feelings. Oftentimes, I don't know how to express my feelings. So that becomes something that's an ongoing dynamic in the home. Communication, for the most part, is at best when it's indirect and it's passive. I'm not going to tell you exactly what I feel. I might do – here's something that happens often, even in the treatment setting, where staff get split by somebody who's chemically dependent when they come in for treatment in their first few days or even after. So that same thing happens in the family, that if I have something to tell dad, I'm going to tell mom. And I might bring it up with dad, but I'm not going to bring it up directly. I'm going to hope that mom then tells him. So we call that splitting. And from a clinical term in psychology classes, we call that triangulation. So I am speaking to you through somebody else because I do not know how to tell you directly what I need.
And these are things people can learn to recognize.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's
so, for example, when they come to group, our clients come to group, when they're in therapy groups, we speak in I statements. When I see you acting this way, I feel scared. And I need to hear that you care about me. So we do a lot of practicing of that. And they unconsciously will go back to, you know, when you do this or when you do that, I'm like, okay, could you say that in a way that's saying I? Okay, when I
right.
see you do this, I get scared. So
they don't get to play that game.
So we do the same thing with family to help them understand.
Yeah.
So we diffuse the triangulation. We diffuse the cross-communication.
I see in some
passive
of the
behaviors.
I see in some of the notes here that you provided – the admonition, don't be selfish. What are you talking about there?
Yeah, I think that if I say how I'm affected by this, I feel like I'm just thinking about me. Or I become angry by your using, and so then I might shame you and say, you know, how could you always be thinking about you all the time? So I vacillate between the blow-ups and accusing you of the using, and then half the time then I'm going back for the next few weeks, holding on to it, and then taking that resentment out on myself. What am I doing? So I'm either taking it in and hurting myself that way and not getting my needs met, or I'm going to lash out and blame you. You know, psychologists call that introspection, interjection,
right,
and then or projection. I'm going to put my anger on you.
But it's certainly okay and, in fact, necessary for a family member to say, this is what is happening with me. I want you
right.
to be clear on what your behavior is doing to me so you
right.
can understand that and see it.
Right. If I speak in an unconditionally loving tone and just say, listen, I love you, but I can't tolerate this behavior. It breaks my heart, but you're going to need to go somewhere to get some help because you can't live this way. I can't live this way, certainly, with you. If you choose to continue to use, we're going to be at a place where I have to do something different or you have to go and leave the home. So that's just one
sure.
example. So there's a variety of what's my investment in the relationship, and am I – because addiction is certainly going to take that away from you. Whatever it is that you're thinking that is going to help your son or daughter or family member, addiction really, when it's active, doesn't care about that. That doesn't mean that your loved one doesn't care about you. That means that when he's active in his addiction or she's active in her addiction, she's going to manipulate that love, and it looks like she doesn't care. So you need to understand that that's the addiction talking to you,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily your son or daughter or husband or wife.
And in that context, if I've understood what you've just said about the dynamic that has to go on here, this notion of not rocking the boat, it's got to go away, right?
Right.
It's got to be eliminated immediately.
So we try to keep a transparent, open relationship, and we're going to talk about the elephant in the living room.
Right, because
we're definitely going to talk about it.
Rocking the boat is, in a sense, the goal, right?
Right.
Because the boat's going down.
Right.
Finally, the, with regard to just this area of rules for the family, that can be thought of, I guess, the description you just made, of a pretty grim situation. It doesn't have to be that way. There can be playfulness and some lightness in this.
Oh, sure.
It's not all grim, is it?
No, right. So, you know, anything that's a distraction from the seriousness of what's going on. I mean, and so some days it might actually look like a fairly normal situation, you know. So, you know, But the interaction is still at a superficial level, and everybody's on guard. You know?
So when someone comes to retreat or any treatment facility, and they are in active addiction, they are abusing substances, they're treated for that over
right.
here, and the family is treated sort of separately, but with the goal of helping the addict.
Right.
So you will deal with family members separately, right?
Yeah, separately or together. We have them, again, as part of their visitation, they come in and they become educated. So the family members will come in, learn a little bit about what some of the items that we talked about today with codependency, the nature of addiction. Here's what to look for. Here's some underlying issues. And here's what to do, some behaviors that are going to help bring about recovery and kind of you know, help you connect with your loved one while they're working on their sobriety. So we provide a lot of information around that and around what to expect from your loved one who's getting chemical dependency treatment. You know, what are the key things that are going to happen in the first 3 months, the next 6 months, what happens in a recovery house, what happens at 12-step meetings. So they
Because it's all a mystery.
Empowered.
It's all a mystery.
They really don't know, right?
They have no idea.
Right.
As a clinician, you've done this many, many times. You find it Or do you take your lead from the family as to whether you deal with mom separately and dad separately and or all together?
No, we try to put them together and help them understand so they can kind of get together then and start to debrief. When they leave the education seminar, the light bulbs are going off and they're saying, wow, like – so we want to let them know. And we also, when the clients meet with them when they're starting to get sober, they want them to know, like, look, it's not your fault. This isn't your fault. So, again, parents being good parents – oftentimes looking at themselves like, did I do this? How did I do this? I know I must have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved you, but I maybe there's something I missed and I caused this. So there is a very, what we call, you know, it's an irrational belief, but it's a relief. It's a belief that most parents believe that if I, you know, I do everything right because I care about you and you're my son or daughter, And if something happened wrong, it's got to go back to me. Somewhere I did something wrong here.
And on some level, whether it's close to the surface or deep, the substance abuser understands that. I mean,
absolutely,
they get that.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times when I have family sessions, when I have family members and the clients together, tell their family members, like, look, you need to understand that this, you didn't do this.
How important is it? And we're going to take a break here now, Jack. But how important is it at the end of the day to have everybody involved know that we're all in this together?
I think it's helpful to have as many people involved as possible, especially the people that the client really does see as important in their life, the people that they're most strongly connected to. Even parents who maybe have in the pain broken off and said, "Okay, I've done it. I'm done. I've had it. I don't even want to be involved in the treatment." At some point, we encourage the client to then reach out to them and let them know, because again, that reaction is also a very codependent response. So, if the primary enabler, for example, is coming here for treatment, they're loving the person no matter what. The person who becomes apathetic is saying, "Well, I'm done with whatever. I don't want to do this anymore." We want to let them know, like, look, there is hope here and there's information, and we really would like you to come out so you can learn a new role, a new way to connect with your son or daughter.
Jack Sodak, our guest, Director of Outpatient Services at Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We will be back. You're listening to Recovery Radio. Don't go away. We're back. Recovery Radio. Reminder again, we're here Saturdays at this time talking about the disease of addiction. It's very much in the news. We all know what's going on in this country with regard to substance abuse. It is at epic and, catastrophic proportions. But this does not change the fact that millions of people manage to find their way through this disease. They wind up managing it. It is not something that can be cured. And millions wind up in long-term successful sobriety. So that's what we'd like to keep foremost in your mind as you listen to something like Recovery Radio. Jack Sodak, their Director of Outpatient Services for Retreat, has been with us today talking about the role of the family in this. It's another cliche, which is obviously true, is that addiction is a disease of the family. Everybody, in one sense, gets this disease. Jack, so as a successful, quote-unquote, treatment is going forward, and you're dealing with the addict, and you've got the family dealing with codependency issues and how to manage all of that, do you as a clinician have to keep an eye out for unrealistic expectations on the part of everybody?
Right, absolutely. So oftentimes if I'm in a role and I've been portraying that role for a long time to survive and get through this, I might continue to get back into that role. I'm going to call you and find out if you're really at an AA meeting. I'm going to call you and see if you really need a ride from the treatment center. That person, for example, then we would encourage them to practice detaching and not calling. Call them when you want to just have a coffee and connect, rather than calling out of the role of checking up and making sure you're really doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, so you're not a cop here, right?
So yeah, the caretaking role, if that's something that I relate to and I'm listening to this, then practice, a few hours at a time, maybe even, or a day or so at a time, not doing too much checking up, just to say hi. I even did this with adolescents. For example, when adolescents would come in and they get sober, their parents are still calling and wanting to know every little thing they're doing. So oftentimes the adolescent who is in early recovery would call their mother 3 times a day just to say, "Hey, I'm going to the treatment center. I'm going right from school. I'm going to stop at Burger King first. I'll call you when I'm leaving. I might go to a meeting afterwards, a 12-step meeting."
Just to lower the anxiety levels.
So initially the kids were like, "Well, that's crazy. She's gonna call me even more." I'm like, "I don't know. I think the whole idea here is that she practices calling you less. And if she's struggling with that, when we have family night, we can talk about that with her."
I have a question for you. It just occurs to me. You know, it's possible now for parents to monitor their children's behavior by the phone. They can track them on the phone.
Right.
Do you guys have a view on whether that's a good thing or not?
Well, again, we're trying to build trust here. There's a lack of trust, a serious lack of trust in the family when active addiction is going on, and justifiably so. So we want to practice not be mistrusting so much. So give it a chance. If they said this is what they're going to do, let you know, hang on there and get some support outside of contacting that family member and see if they really did come home and really did go to that meeting and really did go to Burger King, because that's the beginning then of your new life together, that he or she is learning how to manage her life without chemicals. He or she is learning to be very honest with you, and they're going to express their feelings to you.
And that's beneficial for both parties.
Absolutely. Because now I can kind of connect in a more loving way, mm-hmm. and in a way I'm supposed to be connecting with you.
And the substance abuser can begin to feel like, I can do this.
Right.
Nobody has to sit on top of me. I
have to manage my recovery, and you can't manage it for me. And if I'm the family member, I have to realize, like, you need to manage your recovery, and I need to detach and step back. And so as a result, I need to start maybe taking care of myself and looking at doing things that I want to be doing all the time here. I want to make sure that I'm going to the gym and I'm taking care of myself and I'm not racking myself with worry and anxiety all night worrying if you're going to be okay.
Do you recommend there are support groups for family members?
Absolutely.
Do you recommend that often?
Absolutely.
For
yeah, there are books to read. There are lots of self-help books. There is Al-Anon. Naranon, there are support groups usually at counseling centers. We have a local weekly support group here every Thursday here at Akron in our building at 7:30 in the evening. And that's for anybody in the community that's got somebody that's active in addiction or struggling and they just want some support as a family member.
So in the final couple of minutes here now, just so that people listening can understand what the ultimate goal of this whole thing is getting somebody to treatment is the beginning of a process. It's not a magic wand or a silver bullet, the beginning of a process to deal with this disease. And the role of a place like Retreat is to come up with a treatment plan.
Right. So overall, I mean, mainly I'm trying to educate myself. We're trying to educate family members as well as clients about their identity and their roles in the family, understanding the recovery process, separating themselves, both of them, myself as a family member as well as the client, from their disease and what that looks like, practicing self-care, you know, trying to focus on myself, enhancing my own positive self-talk, like, okay, now I can kind of take care of me. And take my eyes off of my loved one and put it on my own life and take a look at myself. And then practice unconditional love for myself as well as my family. And if there's other issues going on, you know, traumatic issues or things from my past, then maybe I need to look at that. Oftentimes, you know, this can be very generational. So oftentimes if my father was an active alcoholic, and I got, and then he ended up, I ended up leaving the home. Oftentimes I'm ending up permeating that role of being a caretaker and marrying an alcoholic. So if that's the case, and now my alcoholic husband or spouse is gotten sober, I need to now stop and take a look at that. And sometimes that requires some treatment and therapy, and not a lot sometimes. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's just like I
being
need
aware.
To kind of debrief.
Right.
And start to take care of myself in a loving way.
Jack, it's a fascinating topic. This disease is so insidious. It takes things that families would do in the normal course of being a loving, supportive family and turns it against them and exacerbates the disease. So the more often we can talk about this, I think the more benefit people get. Jack Sodak, Director of Outpatient Services, thanks so much. We will all be together tomorrow
for
Fall Fest if you're in the Akron area. What's the address again?
333 South 7th Street in Akron, Pennsylvania.
From noon until 3, music, people tour the facilities. That's where you'll find us. If we miss you tomorrow, we'll see you next Saturday on Recovery Radio. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.